The following contest is scheduled for one fall. Please welcome Mr. Freds.
Hi, folks. Fretz here. Between now, which is the middle of May, and the beginning of September, there are going to be some weeks where I am just straight up too busy or tired to review a wrestling show. So on those off weeks, I have some scripts that I've been quietly working on, some of which for the past several years. Some of them are old things that I wish to turn into a blog post. And that very same blog eventually became this podcast that you're listening to. So, I'm going to be doing some fantasy bookings on those weeks, and you're going to hear them on whatever those off weeks are. And this one is reserved for the May long weekend. And I can tell you, heading up to that one, there's just not going to be a lot of time. I'll be working and I'll be tired. So, this week, a quick diversion from the Attitude Era to, well, the beginning of the Attitude Era, arguably, to some people. What if Bret Hart didn't go to WCW? Catch you on the other side. So, let's take ourselves back to 1997. I'm going to try to be as realistic as possible here, but for just a little bit. Let's pretend that the WWE didn't have very many money woes at this point in time. Yes, WCW was routinely smashing them in the ratings for those 83 weeks. Houses for pay-per-view TV house shows were okay. I mean, I went to my first house show in November 1997, and I remember it being full. Mind you, it was the first ever WWE show in Barrie, Ontario, not far away from where I grew up. So, I'm probably wrong on this, but I don't know if the issues were as bad as people have said. Business definitely picked up in 1998, and in my opinion, a certain screw job played a major role in it, with that also being the creation of a certain redacted character. Also, this might be a slightly unpopular opinion. But I might subscribe, or I might see validity in the theory that the Montreal Screwjob was a work. Yes, Bret Hart's my second favorite wrestler of all time, right after his brother Owen. Woo! I'm aware that Bret did not want to drop the belt to Shawn Michaels in Canada, but putting my tinfoil hat on here, the documentary crew for Wrestling with Shadows followed him and his family around before, during, and after Montreal. I mean, they even had footage from Bret and Julie Hart's living room watching Monday Night Raw when Shawn Michaels brought out the small person version of Bret Hart wearing the Bret Hart mask and them just, you know, sharing that look and all that. They showed a lot of footage. Exclusive backstage footage from that. Not from Vince McMahon getting socked in the face, but they showed footage from Raw where Vince McMahon said Bret screwed Bret. It pains me to think like that, but I like a good conspiracy theory. There's a few that I actually think are fairly valid, none of which I'm going to divulge into at this point in time, because this is not a conspiracy theory podcast. This is a wrestling podcast. Especially like a good conspiracy if it's convincing. And some people have convinced me, kind of, to think if there's at least smoke to that fire. So, here we go. Anyways, being a Canadian wrestling fan in the 1990s, anyone from my country, from my home and native land, from the Great White North, automatically became my favorite wrestler. That especially rang true for the Harts. Bret was the kind of wrestler a child like me could look up to. He always had that never give up and you can achieve anything attitude that I found admirable. That was until he turned his back on America, reformed the Hart Foundation, and became a heel. You'd think that I would cheer that. However, in 1997, I was 13 years old. I was what the wrestling fans and industry would call a mark, in parentheses, cheering and booing whoever the TV told me to, because it's scripted television. I'm not supposed to root for Walter White. I'm not supposed to root for insert other villain, Siler from Heroes. My God, if you remember that show and that debacle. Yikes.
Yeah.
I was doing what the TV told me to. And I knew I liked that every time he came back to Canada, he'd get cheered. And that he called the United States of America a giant toilet bowl. And because of that, every geography class following that, I could not unsee it. And he said he'd, in one other promo, he would put the drain in Pittsburgh, even though the toilet water is right on the Gulf of Mexico. And, well, you know. So today, though, I would gladly cheer for any anti-USA gimmick even more, especially with, let's just say, your recent track records of presidents, America. No offense. Full offense. So, Bret Hart, after months of tumultuous contract negotiations and alleged financial turmoil, Vince was left with no other choice than to terminate Bret's 20-plus year contract, allowing him to venture outside of the WWE for the first time since 1984. In WCW, Bret Hart was misused, he was squandered, and got lost in the shuffle. Does that sound familiar, Tony Khan? It didn't help Bret that many people running the show backstage, cough, Nash and Hogan, I think they kind of had beef with him stemming as far back as WWE because the Click and WrestleMania 9. While Bret did have moderate success as a multi-time U.S. and world champion, his career was sadly cut short due to an errant kick by Bill Goldberg. I always wondered what it would have been like if Bret Hart stayed in the WWE. What if money was no object? What if things were different? Here's how I would book things. And we begin our story at SummerSlam 1997. Bret wins the WWE title thanks to an accidental on-purpose chair shot by Michaels onto The Undertaker, just like IRL. Now, instead of starting a program with The Patriot, no offense, Del, RIP, Bret faces off with Vader, who is taking umbrage with his attitude towards the USA. While Vader does not force the audience to stand up for the national anthem and do the Pledge of Allegiance, he sticks up for his country in his own way by beating the shit out of Brett and breaking a Canadian flag over him at a show in Toronto. Hey, Calgary already had In Your House Stampede. Give Canada another moment. A big heel moment. At least for us Canadians. I mean, Americans, whatever. So Brett and Vader steal the show at In Your House Ground Zero and then have a tag team flag match at Bad Blood. Yes, with the Patriot. And of course, you know, let's just say Canada gets the upper hand on both of these ones. The lead up to Survivor Series 97 is basically the same, but with Brett's well-known contract negotiations woven into the storyline. Backstage reporters ask Brett if he's going to leave, and he just keeps dodging the question and changing the subject. Who am I to doubt El Dandy? Meanwhile, on TNT, NWO come out to the ring here for one of their insufferable promos. They all come to the ring with little miniature Canadian flags. And Eric says to the camera, "Excellently executed, A." Yes, as a Canadian, I'm adding the A. Shut up. Brett versus Shawn is announced for Survivor Series, with the stipulation that if Brett loses the title, he is gone from the WWE. Now, during the match, this is going to sound familiar, HBK locks Brett in the sharpshooter, and then Vince screams at Earl, the ring is mic'd up, "Ring the damn bell, Earl, or you're fired." Mike picks this one up, right? So Earl swallows his pride, and we have a new champion. The pivotal part of Vince saying Brett screwed Brett and the creation of the Mr. McMahon character will still happen here. That there is the genesis, not of McGillicuddy, but of this gimmick. And despite Vince's recent dalliances, I still cannot change course with the character because of how much it meant to professional wrestling. We, however, just get there in a slightly different way. The next night on Nitro, Hogan cuts a promo on Sting ahead of Starrcade, saying that he is the best there is, was, and ever will be, giving a subtle nod to a potentially incoming hitman. Or not. I mean, you're teasing something that you're not going to deliver. I mean, WCW was actually pretty good at doing this. So this is where you're going to get another one of those. Meanwhile, Shawn Michaels defends the WWE title against Owen Hart at In Your House DX, not Ken Shamrock. Also, like IRL, because Kane is in the picture, The Undertaker challenges Michaels for the world title at the Royal Rumble. That match takes place, and it goes off exactly the same way, complete with Kane costing him the match and Shawn Michaels damaging his back. A few things I can't change course in history here. So, the next night, against Shawn's better judgment, because, quite frankly, backstage he was not being a good person, he comes down to the ring to do business in street clothes. Disheveled, he hasn't shaved. And he cuts his sad promo. This is going to sound familiar. Last year, or 2 years ago, well, yeah, last year, this is 98, I lost my smile. This year, I lost my spine. And he sadly leaves the title in the ring for turning around and super kicking Vince McMahon on his way out. We will not see Shawn until he becomes the commissioner of the WWE. Meanwhile, Stone Cold wins the Royal Rumble and punches his ticket for WrestleMania 14. Later in the night, on Raw, Vince announces a tournament at No Way Out with anyone other than Austin going for the vacant WWE title. Because it's a deadly game. Oh, deadly game is coming early this year, folks. Because Austin already won the Rumble and the chance to main event Mania, that's off the table. He, however, still needs an opponent for that title with Shawn Michaels down and out. The entire tournament takes place at No Way Out with one spot open. And at the start of the show, we see Vince on the phone with somebody. Like, okay, I know we've had our differences, but if anyone can represent the company in a way that I see fit, it's you. I need you to be in this tournament. I guarantee that you can do well and even win the title tonight. Are you with me? There are 8 men in this tournament. They are The Rock, Triple H, Mankind, Kane. Hold that thought. Kane is taken out due to The Undertaker returning and punching his ticket to WrestleMania with the Big Red Machine. That's where you get The Undertaker returning through Hellfire and Brimstone through that flaming casket on the stage on Raw. I will walk through hell itself to face you, Kane. Okay, so someone's getting a bye in this thing. Also, we have The Rock, Triple H, Mankind, Steve Muffuggin Blackman, and a mystery opponent. The final first round match has Owen Hart in the ring waiting for his opponent. And then you hear that familiar Bret Hart. Owen is jumping up and down for joy. Yeah, he's kind of the Black Heart here, but for just a second, he goes full King of Hearts because he cannot contain his excitement that his big brother is back. They go for a hug. Bret Hart accepts the hug, but low blows him, locks Owen in the sharpshooter, and Owen passes out. Vince comes out on the stage to cut a promo. Bret, I know we had an incident at Survivor Series, and I apologize. I overstepped. When you didn't go to WCW and Shawn went down with that injury, I knew I needed you. I now need you more than ever because Stone Cold has won the Rumble and I cannot have a beer-swilling, grash-talking, foul-mouthed man representing my company. Bret Hart then wins the one-night tournament, defeating Ken Shamrock in the finals, thanks to a brass knuckle shot by The Rock, and Ken Shamrock passes out in the sharpshooter. The next night on Raw, I almost lost my spot. Vince and Bret come out both in suits. Bret Hart with his new WWE title for the 6th time. Vince says that Bret is a role model and can lead this company into the new millennium. Vince also buys the contract of impending special guest referee Iron Mike Tyson, who seemingly stacked the deck against Austin even more so. Kind of like when Mike Tyson joined DX, but a little different. Red acknowledges Vince's stunt at Survivor Series, saying that they now have a common goal: keep Austin being champion by any means necessary. Nation of Domination perks up. Owen Hart comes out, asking, why are you doing this after what Vince did to you at Survivor Series? Why are you with Vince McMahon? Brett reminds Owen that it's because of the hatred for Stone Cold Steve Austin. You hate Austin as much as I do, Owen, if not more. Remember SummerSlam? You told me on good authority that you did that on purpose. Listen, if that is in poor taste, I apologize. I am very sorry, okay? This is a fantasy booking, okay? Moving on. Austin storms the ring. Vince and Brett, they bail. Austin glares a hole at Owen, who just begins to get this sheepish, guilty look on his face, almost on the verge of crying. Austin turns around to grab a mic, but then you just see Owen's face change. He nails Austin with a crowbar. He grabs a chair, and we think he's going to position Austin for a pile driver on it. I mean, a sit-down pile driver on it, but Owen puts him down, thinks better of it. He picks him up in the real pile driver position, not that one, you sickos, and drops Owen Austin on the chair. Even more so, the odds are stacked against Austin. Meanwhile, Mike Tyson, we all know he's the referee here, right? I mentioned here, he already joined up with Hart and Vince. I was just reiterating that in my in my thing. So they take out Stone Cold. And Austin is not seen or heard from until the week before WrestleMania. Vince is in the ring with Brett and declares the main event of WrestleMania canceled. Bret Hart actually does not like the sound of that and says, you know, I don't like the sound of not competing at WrestleMania. It doesn't feel right. So in the spirit of competition and good sportsmanship and tradition, I challenge my brother Owen to a match at WrestleMania. In the spirit of competition and brotherly love, what do you think, Owen? Owen and Brett have made amends at this point in time. And they accept. And unlike WrestleMania 10, Owen, we're going to do this with nothing but respect against each other. Last chatters. Austin comes out and says, nothing is stopping me from kicking your ass at WrestleMania. No doctor's note. No mealy-mouthed little brother. No baddest man on the planet. Not even you, Vince. Flips the bird. Mike Tyson blindsides Austin with a punch. You a thing? Vince laughs maniacally. WrestleMania 14 comes around, and instead of Brett versus Owen, we see a different version of Owen's actual match at WrestleMania 14, and that is for the European title against Triple H. However, Owen Hart this whole time, I should have mentioned, is the European champion. he defends against Triple H with the roles reversed here, where Owen's kind of a babyface, Triple H is a full-fledged heel. No Sergeant Slaughter, but Triple H still wins. And he wins the title for the first time here. Ooh. Finally, Austin defeats Brett for the world title, main event. Afterwards, Tyson punches Brett, and history is made. Austin starts a feud with Mick Foley, and the rest of the story plays out like in real life, complete with deadly game and title vacancies and Hell in a Cell and whatnot. So Brett is not seen until Royal Rumble 99. He comes out at number 30 to attempt to eliminate Austin. However, like 1997, the ref doesn't see it, and they make their way back in the ring, where Austin once again eliminates Brett, who distracts Austin long enough for Vince McMahon to eliminate Austin and win the Royal Rumble. Listen, I hated Rumble 99 with a passion. This was chief among the reasons why. However, I have to leave this in for this bit, right? So like real life, Vince McMahon has to relinquish his spot at WrestleMania, and he decides to try and book a new Royal Rumble match on Raw to determine the real winner. Out comes a returning Shawn Michaels, who says that a certain sergeant has vacated his commissioner role, and I decided to sign on the dotted line. In fact, Vince, it was your wife's idea. Hi, Linda, waves to the camera. So no, Vince, there will be no Rumble 2 Electric Boogaloo. You silly Billy. Have you read the rule book recently? You can't make these decisions. You can't make WrestleMania decisions. You are not the man who can book the main event. That man is the Hurt-Free Kid. You, sir, have checked yourself out of WrestleMania, and Stone Cold Steve Austin has checked himself in. But, Steve, if you want it bad enough, if you want WrestleMania bad enough, then I got a match for you. You, one-on-one, with Vince, in a steel cage.
Well, damn, Sean, I like that. But first, I got a hitman to execute. I cannot whoop the boss's ass without that. Without this sorry son of a bitch out and about. What I propose to you, man, is a career versus career match in Toronto.
And we go from there. So Monday Night Raw in Toronto, Bret Hart has his final bow. He loses his match to Austin. We see In Your House, St. Valentine's Day Massacre take place with the same cage match. Austin wins, the Big Show debuts, and the rest is history. Bret Hart quietly steps away from the company, especially after Owen Hart passes away. Or in this reality, I prefer he didn't die. However, I have already done a What If Owen Hart Lived podcast in the past. So, Bret Hart becomes somewhat of an ambassador to the WWE during some Canadian shows that take place in, he pops up in Calgary, he pops up in Edmonton, Raw's in Vancouver, maybe in the odd Toronto show. Bret Hart comes to, you know, say hello, do a nostalgia bit, take part in an angle, even be general manager on occasion before finally taking his rightful place in the WWE Hall of Fame. So that there is just a quick couple of months rebooking of Bret Hart's not WCW run. Maybe in the future, I'll write one for his actual WCW run. Let me know what you think about this, folks. You can find me on socials at Pretzelmania. That's FreTzle Mania. Apologies for the way I've been sounding. I'll become recording this. I've been fighting a shitty bug. Hopefully going away in the next little while. This podcast is on Wrestle Addict Radio. Say it with me, all the cure for the common wrestling podcast. Home of Kings of the Rings, Race for Impact, and the Young Lions Perspective. So until next time, folks, TTFN, ta-ta for now, and keep your stick on the ice.